Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds today. Rich Guthrie is here to answer your questions about them. A veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and a former compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident avian expert. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. Check in on Facebook at WAMC Radio, or you could tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But call, I like that, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Rich, you said something. Well, first of all, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Nice to be here again.
You said something a moment ago that I found immensely depressing, and that is that the fall migration has begun. It's just summer now.
I know. What they're saying is, you know, winter's coming on.
Come on, man.
Summer's almost gone.
Don't bring me down.
No.
Fall migration now?
It's a happy thing. They're done being here, for many of them. Many, many more are still going to be with us for a few more months, but the first of the exodus are opening the door.
And who are the first to take part in the fall migration?
Well, locally, the ones that we can say goodbye to about now are some of the swallows, the barn swallows, the tree swallows that have produced their brood for the season and or not. And they're getting out of here. They're streaming down the river, the Hudson River, the Connecticut River, on their way down to the coast.
Yeah.
And from there, they'll keep on going to Florida, Cuba, Yucatan, Colombia, Argentina. And the other ones are the shorebirds, those guys that were nesting up on the coast of the Arctic Ocean.
So they're not here long.
No.
Passing
no.
through.
They're just part-timers in our neighborhood. We rent them for a little while, and then they send them back to across the border, South America, where they'll spend the bulk of the year before returning next spring.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I saw a bird the other day that I'm afraid I don't have the good spokesbook yet. And it was, I'm going to say it was a confirmation of a catbird, only larger. And it was black and white. It wasn't the warbler. It wasn't that black and white warbler thing. It looked like it was a tiger stripe, you know, black and white.
You're scowling, Rich.
I am wondering.
Very unusual. I've never seen it. I couldn't find it in the books.
Which way were the black and whites going on this thing?
I swear there were like stripes.
Stripes.
I mean, it seems like they're all connected. You know, like sometimes rings will.
Were they going the length of the body or across the body, would you say?
I'm going to say the length of the body.
Whoa. I was going to zero in on one of our woodpeckers that has.
Oh, no. It's not like that at all.
Okay, the red-bellied woodpecker has a zebra-like pattern on the back.
No, I know him. I know him.
Oh, you know that guy. Okay.
Yeah, we have a pair of those babies.
Okay. Now, stripes going the length of the body, black and white.
Do you have your book?
I do. I have several good books here.
Okay.
But the place to start is, I don't know. You know what, Lynn? I'm going to work on this for a few minutes. And how big was this bird?
A little, I would say bigger than a cowbird.
Bigger than a cowbird.
Okay, how big is a cowbird?
Oh, smaller than the bullbird.
Oh, come on.
All right.
Come on, man.
All right, the cowbird is smaller than a robin.
Okay.
And bigger than a sparrow.
Okay, I'd go up as far as a robin, only it was shaped more like a cowbird or a catbird.
Yeah.
Now, what's a catbird? Excuse me?
A catbird is a type of songbird that's all gray. It's like wet slate color gray.
With just a confirmation, yeah.
Yes, right. And a catbird is one of our more common bird species. They nest locally. They have a black cap and a long tail. They're related to the mockingbird. Now, I'm thinking that perhaps this is a female of one of the bird species. Perhaps, have you thought about female red-winged blackbird? That is...
No, it's not that. This is absolutely white and black.
Okay.
Well, is this a new one, Rich?
No. It's just going to take me a little longer to zero in on it. And I know several friends of mine are out there saying, Guthrie, it's a... And they're telling me vicariously what it is.
All right, well, maybe they'll call in.
Maybe they will.
Maybe we'll have them on the show next time.
Thank you very much.
You'd be more than welcome.
Hey,
okay.
Lynn, thanks a lot.
Oh, you know what I'm also thinking is perhaps a bobolink.
Bobolink?
Yes.
Oh, bobolink, right? Okay, well.
They will have that black and white pattern. It's not exactly stripes. It's more or less patches.
Oh, well, okay. I'll look that up in one of the books that I have. I couldn't find anything that looks like it.
Okay, well.
Can you get a picture, Lynn, and email it to Rich?
Gee, I'm never going to see that bird again.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks a lot, and Rich will figure it out.
And if by the way, if you do find that you look up the bobolink and that's what you come up with, let us know that, too. Get us off the hook here.
As a matter of fact, if you find out that we have usually a one-call policy, but I would break that if you figure it out before Rich does, all right?
Okay, I agree with grateful. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, you're on it.
Appreciate it. Let's go to Joe in Warwick. Hi, Joe. You're on.
Hi. There's a phenomenon where I guess my question for you is, what do birds carry with them in certain places? One of my friends had a farm pond years ago. He didn't put any fish in it. Before he knew it, there were catfish in it, and his hypothesis was that ducks had flown from one pond to another and had catfish eggs with them.
Brilliant. That's a great question.
Are there other instances, whether they bring seeds or other types of things, other types of animals with them, eggs, things like, or maybe even some invasive species?
I'm sure that happens more often than we witness, goes on while we're not looking. And I agree with your friend's suggestion that that's what might have happened. I had the same thing happen with one of our restoration ponds, our wetland ponds.
Yes.
Totally isolated from any other body of water. It was by a series of drop inlets that would be impossible for any creature to work its way up. And yet, two summers ago, it was loaded with little chub minnows. How they got there is a mystery. And they disappeared, by the way. The pond was too shallow where they could not survive the freeze-up of the winter. So we start anew, and if there's another population of fish. So I think that may well be what happens.
It's interesting how nature takes care of itself, and you can't make any assumptions.
You're absolutely right about that. And, it's always fascinating to find these mysteries that go on out there. And as far as other hitchhikers, I'm sure that happens. The ducks and the herons and the and even the things that will fly from pond to pond will inadvertently bring some things along with them.
Amazing.
Yeah. So. Yep. I had one more question for you.
Sure.
We had for a while, and I wasn't sure what to do with this, one of those very large woodpeckers with that kind of a red head on it.
The pileated woodpecker.
Yeah, and I had looked it up on the web. It came and it started working on a tree by us, and I think thankfully it stopped because this tree, from what I understand, these huge woodpeckers will build their nests in this. I don't even think this tree was wide enough for him to put a nest in if he wanted to get in there, and he stopped drilling it, but in no seconds at all he had torn like huge chunks of bark off and was partway into it. What do they need very large trees, and what do you do if you really don't want them hanging around and destroying your trees?
Well, the thing is that they're not destroying the tree. They're more like a tree surgeon than going in there after something that is affecting the tree to begin with.
So a bug?
Yeah, carpenter ants or some sort of boring beetles or grubs that are inside the bark of the tree, and somehow they can detect them. How they detect them is a great mystery, because but they find them, and they clean them out. So what they did was remove the infestation of whatever beetles or bugs or grubs might have been in there. The other thing is that to build a nest, there's where they will not rip apart a tree. They will build a neat little hole. Yeah. Large enough for them to come in and out of, 3 inches in diameter or so, and use that. And that will be the extent of the work that they'll do on that tree.
Yeah.
So I suspect that this tree had some sort of problem going, and to some extent they were helping out.
Well, listen, I really appreciate it. What's the strangest thing you've ever found that a bird made out of a nest?
Well, that's great.
The strangest thing, well,
yeah, or used or parts or something.
Yeah,
like that.
The saddest thing that I've seen used is monofilament fishing line.
Oh, jeez.
And I've seen where young birds have gotten tangled up inadvertently in the nest. And quite often that ends up tragically for them. But you find the bits and pieces of plastic or yarn or horsehair back in the day where birds would put into the nest. And then one of the birds is known, suspected of using snake skins as a nest material.
Wow.
Now, whether that's intentional or not, as some suggest, that they build, they weave snakeskin in there to ward off predators. The other line of thought is that snakeskin happened to be there. It was handy. It was useful, and they used it.
Yeah.
No other intended purpose.
Joe, that's a great, what a great series of questions. I appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Thanks, Joe.
Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Rich, we really got off to an interesting start on this program.
I like it.
It's a downhill from here, obviously. Well, we
got the heights to soar.
All right. Hope springs eternal. 1-800-348-2551. More calls coming up.
Support comes from Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy. InterimHealthcare.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Unison Arts, New Paltz, presenting the year-round Unison Woodland Sculpture Garden and Main Gallery exhibition of Hannah Eschel's Fishers through August 24th. UnisonArts.org. Kent Hicks Construction, West Chesterfield, Massachusetts, specializing in energy-efficient, net-zero passive house home building, deep energy retrofits, and historical restorations, serving Western Massachusetts. KentHicksConstruction.com. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenAndPerrin.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. It's The Bird Show with Rich Guthrie and yours truly, Ray Graff. Number to call, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And Rich, you had some email questions which you wanted to answer.
I did, yes. And I've received a couple of notes from folks who were listening the last time. And one of them was from Susan in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And I hope Susan is listening today. She asks, that if red starts are a bird that she can expect around her house there in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And the answer is yes, Susan, certainly.
Red starts.
Red starts.
Okay.
Now, that's called the butterfly of the bird world. It's a beautiful black and red bird that flits around very actively.
Like a hummingbird?
Oh, no, not quite like that. More or less flits. It flashes like a flamenco dancer. And in fact, the Quebec Canadians call that the flamenco warbler.
I'll be darned.
Yes. And they're delightful little guys. And they do occur in higher elevations and in the central Massachusetts, southern Vermont, Connecticut area.
Okay.
And the other one was a question I had regarding bird feeding during the summer. And is it okay? These folks were going to be moving out of the area. And the lady is a very avid bird feeder through the seasons. And if you are feeding during the summer, just be mindful of the bears. You don't want to feed birds if there are bears around.
Right.
Just simply not a good
mix. Just don't
want
the bears in your backyard.
You don't want to invite them into your backyard.
Okay.
That's for sure. But if you can do it and you have a method where you can safely feed the birds, I encourage you to do so. And if you have to go away, by all means, keep feeding the birds. When it's time to say goodbye, say goodbye.
They'll
survive.
The birds
will be fine.
Okay.
What you were doing, we're supplementing the bird's feed. And we're just making them a little happier than they are otherwise.
All right. The bird abides. Let's go to Anita in Cragsmore.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
So I have a couple of questions. I had a robin nest on my front porch near the beginning of June. And the whole process happened so fast. It's like the nest was up in a day. And the chicks are already gone, you know. It's so I was like, do they breed faster than other birds? Or yeah, so that was my question. And is it possible that it was like a second go round for this bird? And I never saw two. I just saw the female. She would like sit on the nest and then she would like seemed to be a solo enterprise.
Oh, so immaculate conception. Interesting.
well, at least be taking care of them.
Oh, right, see. Right. When it came to the being at the home front there. Well, in many bird species, the female is a primary caretaker back at the nest. She does all the work, really, most of all the work. She builds the nest. She tends to the nest. She incubates the eggs and feeds them for the most part. The male is out there somewhere. Defending the territory is his main job, as well as catching food and bringing it back to her and to the chicks or the babes. And they will switch. A male will incubate. Many birds will incubate. The males will incubate the young. And in some species, shorebirds, phalaropes in particular, the male is the primary incubator of the young. The female was just off to somewhere else, and hatches out the eggs and raises the young and sees them to fledging.
Okay.
So, and no, the robin is not any quicker than the other bird species. It's just that they start sooner. They're back here in March and start building their nest right as soon as they get back. And they're, as you might have observed, they're pretty well done while many birds are still starting.
Well, this was all in the space of June. I was like, wow, that's late to get started, and it's all over. Like, nest built in a day, you know, eggs laid, you know, hatch. The next time I looked out, I was like, I saw the chicks, and I was like, I need to check on them. And so I looked out, and they were like, they left the next day. I just couldn't believe how fast it all was.
And you did see the young birds, the fledglings out there on the lawn getting food from the parent birds?
No, I didn't see that. Like, I saw them on the edge of the nest, and then I kind of went to look on them the next day, and they were gone, and I didn't see any robins around.
Okay, well, then they probably, once they leave the nest, they go away. They don't come back for the most part.
Yeah, yeah.
So they probably just took off to another corner of the yard or down the road and were being tended to there. The other possibility is something came and got them. You know, that's they're very vulnerable at that stage.
I don't think so.
Okay, good. Well, then in that case, they're fully fledged and off on their under the tender care of the parents, and then they'll be winging their way south come fall.
Okay, I have one more quick question. There was one egg that didn't hatch. So I was wondering, like, why did that egg not hatch? Was it because she wasn't sitting on it? Or, you know, it's like got out to the edge, or why don't eggs hatch?
Great well, question. It may not have been fertilized. She may have been ready to produce the egg, and it just did not catch during the fertilization process, or there may have been some genetic malfunction with the egg itself. It's hard to say.
And then once the chicks are hatched, does the mother, like, not sit on the nest at night? Because, like, by the time I was like, they're pretty big, so I was like, do they stay in the nest at night by themselves and she's just nearby, or does she snuggle in there with them?
She snuggles right up, she puts them under her wing, and they all cuddle together.
That's so sweet.
Anita, thank you.
Can I know this is terrible, but can I ask just one? This is a bird call.
I love this. Sure, absolutely.
Right. Okay. Yes.
I don't. It's not going to be like a very good imitation, but
they're all good.
I really love to identify birds, and you know sometimes they're hard to see. But I heard this one the other day, and it went like, boo, 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 just over and over.
Keep going. I like it.
Yeah, I like that. All right. So, what do you think, Rich?
Over and over and over, huh?
Huh?
Do it again. Whoa.
Are you okay?
Was that part of the song?
I am sitting on the front porch, which I abandoned because of the rat robin, and I just got stung by a wasp.
No.
Ouch. Yeah. Oh. I was like, they built a nest out there, too.
Oh, Anita.
Wow. Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, you see.
So,
Somehow this is Rich's fault.
I feel your pain, Anita. And part of it is because I'm really not connecting with the sound that you're making. So
okay. Well, I'll
work
yeah.
on it, and yeah. you work on
okay.
that bee sting.
Yeah, get some meat tenderizer on there. That always worked for me.
Oh, really? Okay.
All right.
Thank
thanks.
You.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Boy, well, that's a distressing turn.
Wow.
Okay. Well, what next disaster will befall us? Linda in Pattersonville. Linda, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Very good. You're on.
Okay. So this goes back to the caller about the striped bird.
Yes.
We've got several nests out on our front lawn, and we have a pair of rose-breasted grosbeaks.
Okay.
And the female looks very striped. She's about the size of a robin.
There you go.
So I'm just wondering if maybe that was it.
I like that, Linda. I was actually, you know, yes, I was considering that, but I like your idea. I like that thought, Linda.
Well, we'll have to look that one up in your book and see if it matches the description.
Well, we have it right here.
Okay.
That's what I was thinking is maybe you could look that up. That's my only comment. It's a great show, and I'll get off the phone with someone else.
Hey, Linda, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Okay, that's the bottom one there, the rose-breasted...
The female rose-breasted grosbeak does have a pattern of streaking that may appear in black and white.
What about the top one there?
Well, the top one, that rose-breast, shout out to you. That's its name.
Okay.
The rose-breasted grosbeak, a big rose-colored red patch on it.
All right, well, that's certainly an option.
That's a very good thought.
All right, let's go to Lou in Altamont. Lou, you're on.
Yes, like Anita, we had the same issue with the robins on the front porch.
Yes.
And it seemed like one day we saw them build a nest, and the next day they started feeding them.
Yes.
It just seemed very quick, but that wasn't my original question. My original question is, we have the same number of feeders out that we've had out all spring.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly there's been a tremendous decline in the variety and number of birds that are coming to the feeders.
Mm-hmm.
Live in a heavily wooded area. I'm curious if there's a point at which they go for insects.
Oh, there definitely is. There is a point in time where the birds will slack off at the feeders and go for the natural food that's in the woods, in the fields around you. And high on the list, as you suggest, are the insects. And then there's also the berries and various fruits that are ripening out there, starting with the service berry and right on through to the honeysuckle and other fruit-bearing bushes that you might have around you. So insects and berries and also some of the grains are coming in as well. So, but they will also continue to use the feeder. So if you're okay with continuing the feeding, I would not.
Yes, I just don't notice them at the feeder. And we had a giant, I don't know if it's pilated or pilated woodpecker.
It depends on where you're all from.
Say again?
It depends where you're from.
How you say it?
Pileated or pileated.
Okay.
It's like
I just said big woodpecker.
Yes.
Big woodpecker
Literally 10 feet away from the door, and it would actually sit on the suet feeder when the door was being opened, and we could step outside and stand there quietly by the door, and it would continue to feed.
Wow.
It suddenly has disappeared as well.
Probably nesting. Probably back there attending to the nest, and with that they'll be looking for the grubs and other natural food to bring back to the young.
Mm.
So, all right, thank you very much.
Hey, okay. Lou, how'd you do with the storm last night?
Nothing up this way, nothing in Altamont.
Excellent. All right, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest, and Leon and Troy, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm calling to ask if I was hoping you would identify a bird that I saw over the winter that stayed with me. It was a very, very curious looking bird. It was very small. It wouldn't fit on two fingers. I thought it was a leaf at first, and I was staring at it, and I thought it was a bird, so I scrambled to get my camera, and when I came back, it was gone, and I'm sure it was a bird, not a leaf, because, you know, there was snow everywhere, so it was on a little patch of lawn or snow. A very, very small bird, the smallest I've ever seen. Any insight?
Well, the smallest bird that might be around here during the winter would be a kinglet, K-I-N-G-L-E-T. Both the golden crown and ruby crown kinglets occur in our area. The golden crown kinglet, both of those are very greenish in coloration, the golden crown kinglet would be the one more likely to hang around through the winter months. So
yeah, it was a darker color. I would guess it might have been green. I'll have to look it up.
Sort of a brownish green. The ruby crown kinglet is greener than the golden crown kinglet, but as the head is striped with black and white pattern, and the on the golden crown kinglet with a
how small is the bird?
Just slightly larger than a hummingbird.
Wow!
Yes, very tiny.
That makes sense. Yeah, that's about it.
And they're very active. That it disappeared in a hurry is no surprise.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you. The amazing thing is that tiny little thing can survive our winters. It's just, how they, the energy level that they have to maintain.
What do they eat in the middle of the winter?
Oh, they have to find small insects.
In the winter?
In the winter. Eggs and the like that are under leaves or in the bark or on a twig. They're very busy, and it's, slim pickings that time of year.
Yeah, I bet. Let's go to John in Somers, Connecticut. John.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a story I have to share about bluebirds. We've been fortunate to have bluebirds in our backyard for the last several years. But this year, it was very interesting that they started, we've had a nest of them, I think in the early part of May, perhaps, the middle of May.
Mm-hmm.
And they disappeared for a couple of weeks. So I assumed that I didn't see the babies, but they must have left. And then a few weeks later, they came back to the same nest and started over again.
Uh-huh.
And the story I wanted to share was, I've always heard about how sparrows can come in and take over a bluebird's nest, which is what happened. But the good news is the bluebirds did not give up. Mm-hmm. And within 3 or 4 days, the sparrow was gone and the bluebirds took back the nest.
Well, wonderful.
And they've been, the babies are in there now. They're about ready to leave. So... Oh. It's just, it was a good story I wanted to share that. I usually hear about the sparrows taking over and the poor bluebirds lose out,
Is that common? I mean, reclaiming territory?
John describes, the house sparrow will occupy a bluebird nest box, and much to the detriment of the bluebirds themselves. Fortunately, that pair had given up the nest, and the bluebirds moved back in again. Which is good news.
So there wasn't a battle. The sparrows just left.
Well, it's hard to say what.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a.
They would try to fight each other off. Like the bluebird would be on top of the nest of the birdhouse, and then the sparrow would, come in, and then the bluebird would try to chase them away. So it went back and forth like that. There wasn't actually. I never did see a confrontation. But,
no, it's very rarely does it get physical. It'd be a lot of posturing and
posturing exactly. Yeah.
And
I was just thrilled that they didn't give up.
I'm glad for you all.
Yeah, it's just the experience of watching the bluebirds is just amazing. I think it's fascinating. So
well, if folks have an inkling to do so, I would strongly recommend setting up bluebird nest boxes around the property or in the neighborhood as the opportunity comes up. Habitat is half the trick, and if you got the right habitat, the next trip is to invite them in with a suitable nest box.
Where can one find details on how to make one that was suitable for?
Well, there is
bluebirds.
A North American Bluebird Society that does you can search them online. That will provide various bluebird nest box designs.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will have information about nest boxes, and the National Audubon Society, audubon.org.
Okay.
We'll get you some good information.
John, thanks a lot for the call.
Rich, can I ask one quick question?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm not sure about, do I clean the nest, the birdhouses? I've done that in the past, but this time I didn't clean it and they came right back. So.
Yeah, it works both ways. The Bluebird Society recommends cleaning them, but I've seen, as you have, where nests will be utilized again. The good thing about cleaning them out is if over the winter mice move in,
right. I've had that happen, yeah.
Yeah, it's good to evict them before the bluebirds come back.
Sure. Great. Oh, thanks a lot, dude.
Thanks a
lot. Information. Okay.
Now, wouldn't the mice be some snack food for the bird?
Oh, not at all. In fact, they might even snack on the birds.
Really?
Yeah, they'll eat the eggs.
You are kidding me. Yeah. Ken in Blooming Grove. Ken.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Okay.
I had a question. A couple years ago, a friend of mine showed me a video on YouTube of a bird called the Lear bird or the Lyre bird.
Lyrebird.
It was like a BBC wildlife special.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know the facts. Can that bird really imitate foreign sounds such as car alarms and cameras? Because it showed it imitating other birds of its habitat. What was the kookaburra?
Kookaburra.
It was imitating that. And then it showed it imitating other sounds, like a chainsaw. And I just want to know, I know it sounds kind of funny, but I want to know the facts on that, if you know anything about it.
Well, I don't know the full extent of the potential repertoire, but yes, some birds can do amazing imitation of other sounds. And
wow.
Notably, you know, the parrot can do similar imitations of sounds like that. And our own mockingbird will imitate the songs of other birds, some of them quite convincingly. The brown thrasher and the catbird are also mimics that will imitate the sounds, not quite as well as our mockingbird. And as far as the lyrebird is concerned, I'm afraid I have to tell you that, Ken, that I don't know the full range of sounds that they are capable of producing, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, that's one definitely to do a little investigating for the next show. And, Ken, we got to take a break, but thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Boy, it's moving fast today. It's the Bird Show. We'll be back with the lightning round next.
Support comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting The Eye is a Door, landscape photographs by Ann Whiston Spurn, now on view. Exhibition-related programs and more, smith.edu/artmuseum for details. Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. And Foresight Land Services, for over 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com.
One 800-348-2551 is the number. It is Vox Pop, and it is the Bird Show, and that means Rich Guthrie is in the house. Rich, some events you want to let us know about?
Just to mention a couple of things that have come up that people have asked me to bring up. One of them is a beginning bird watching class that the Agroforestry Center of Greene County, New York, will be conducting.
Okay.
Together with the Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Yeah.
That's in Accra, New York. A-C-R-A. In Greene County, New York, on Route 23. That's on Saturday, the 12th, July 12th. For information about that, you can call 518-622-9820.
All right.
And the other one, this will involve eagles, but perhaps a social event with a little wine and cheese for the New Baltimore Conservancy in New Baltimore, New York.
Yeah.
And that will be on Friday, the 18th of July.
So how does it involve eagles if it's a wine and cheese?
We're going to be on the Hudson River, and we're going to be set up to look at the eagles that frequent the neighborhood.
All right. You have a cocktail, you have a little hors d'oeuvre, and you see an eagle.
A little cheer.
How can you lose?
How can you not?
All right. That's lovely.
This is on at 6:30 p.m. on July 18th, Friday night, at the Cornell Park in New Baltimore, New York. And New Baltimore Conservancy online if you need more information.
Outstanding. All right. Anything else?
Oh, other than we are still making plans for our trip to Cuba. If folks want to join us, that's coming up. We're
going
to be...
You're going.
I am fixing to be there, yes. Yeah. And this is going to be a scientific investigation to the natural areas of Cuba early next year. So
fascinating.
Yes, we're going to have some students along to earn some college credits through the State University of New York, and as well as adult participants who want to go out of curiosity, interest, and adventure.
Outstanding. All right, Rich. And by the way, what is your email address if people want to get in touch with you?
Simply my name, Richard P., as in Peter, Guthrie, all one word, Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
All right. Let's go to Russ in Waterford. Hi, Russ. You're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a comment and a question.
Okay.
If I hadn't seen this, I wouldn't believe it. I actually had to go home and Google it. I saw a squirrel attacking a robin's nest and trying to get at the fledglings. And I certainly didn't think that squirrels had any, you know, I thought they were strictly vegetarian.
No, not at all. They're voracious appetite, and they will go after eggs and baby birds, gray squirrels and red squirrels and even chipmunks.
It was a gray squirrel, and it had picked up one of the fledglings and was trying to take off with it, and both parents were going after it pretty hard. I just didn't think they were meat eaters.
Yep.
But the question I have is, my son saw something the other day. Of course, I knew what it was. He didn't. It was a killdeer,
mm-hmm.
and he was fascinated by it. But what I didn't really know when I was telling him what it was, are they here, or are they migratory?
Oh, no, they nest here. They nest in our meadows, down in a pasture, and unfortunately sometimes in a gravel parking lot or the shoulder of a road or in a ball field or athletic field. So, yeah, the killdeer will nest in this area. They produce four eggs, and right about now they're—
Always four?
Always four, curiously.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah.
They stay here all year, right?
No. They'll leave
here.
They'll they're one of those sandpipers or shorebirds that will be migrating out of the area pretty soon. Now, a few of them will linger well into October and perhaps November, and very rarely beyond that. But they're out of here as soon as they can.
This is something I don't know that you can answer. I certainly couldn't for my son. It was a logical question. He was string trimming when he saw this thing, and he said, "Why do they lay their eggs? Why are their nests so? They're so vulnerable to everything from a string trimmer to a lawnmower to a predator."
Yeah, great question.
I couldn't answer.
Well, shorebirds are typically ground nesters. Not all of them. Some of them do nest in trees, surprisingly enough. Sandpipers up on the top of a pine tree. It's a very curious sight for sure. But the killdeer and many of the other shorebirds will nest on the ground, and it is just nature's way. They're not the only ground nesting bird species, but in their evolution and their development, they're really never had to encounter things like lawnmowers or weed whackers or cars.
Right.
But surely predators.
Well, some predators, but they have the most fascinating way of protecting their nest and their babies, and that is that the female or the adults will take on this wounded or crippled, broken wing act.
It's called a broken wing act.
Really?
Yes. And they'll flop along the ground and letting the fox think that there's an easy meal to be had. They'll lead the predator away from the nest. And then
I'm sorry, that's exactly what my son observed.
Isn't that wonderful,
wow,
though, how they picked up on this? And a lot of other birds will do that, too. Even a little song sparrow in the rose bush in the yard will take on that behavior on occasion if you get too close. The little warblers will do that.
Wow.
Thank you very much. I'll let other people on.
Russ, thank you very much for the call. Fascinating. I've learned so much today. J.D. in Goshen. J.D., you're up.
Do birds see color?
Do birds see color?
Yes, of course.
I mean, of course.
Yes, they see color. In fact, they see color beyond our range. They see colors we don't.
Okay.
Infrared, ultraviolet, and the like. But yes, the color is very important for birds.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering, why do birds attack people? We were at a wedding party a few years ago, and there were these little black birds down in Florida that kept attacking all the men in the wedding party, but they didn't bother the women.
Wow.
Selective. You were too close to the nest, that's all. And perhaps the men were taller, easier targets, more menacing looking.
Is this common? Or it sounds like a scene out of The Omen, frankly.
Yeah, well, it is common.
It is common.
It's their way of trying to deter you from approaching too close to the nest.
And they'll just attack. They'll swoop in.
They will. And in fact, the other day I was out there hanging a bird feeder up on a favorite perch in the yard. And a catbird came and landed on my back. And I want to tell you, catbirds are very cute and nice to have around, but when they stick their claws into your back,
yikes,
you know it.
I was in a place where I was going fishing about a month ago, and we came in and we saw a hawk there. And we started to walk in, and all of a sudden I saw the hawk taking off after me, so I ran, and he knocked my hat off my head.
Yeah, they'll do that. Some species of hawk.
I could just feel him.
Yeah.
If he really wanted to get me, he could have.
No, they don't really want to get there. They just want to educate you in a hurry.
He did very well.
Yeah.
This is great. And a great idea for another show next month, When Birds Attack with Rich Guthrie.
Elementary school for birds.
This would be great. All right, let's go over to Barbara in Monticello. Barbara, you're up.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call,
sure.
Rich. Could you tell me how I could keep away squirrels or chipmunks from my feeder?
Well, there are baffles. You can hang your feeder in such a way or attach special baffles themselves that will keep the squirrels from getting to the feeder itself.
What's a baffle?
A baffle, check with the garden supply store. And basically, if your feeder is on a pole or on a string, then it's like
it's on a tree, actually.
It's on a tree, on the trunk or the on a branch.
On a branch.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a device that you can get that will cover like an umbrella above the feeder itself. That will make it so that the squirrel can't just slide down the string to get at the feeder. Yeah, they're very effective when they're applied properly.
Is there any other way? Is there anything I could put on the bird feeder, like some sort of salt or pepper remedy? Because they're not getting from the top down; they're coming from the sides.
Mm. People will mix cayenne pepper with the bird seed, and that apparently has a burning effect, as it would, anybody else, but it doesn't affect the birds. So that mixed in with the bird seed might have a deterring effect. I've tried that in the past, and I prefer the baffle method. So if there's a way that you can isolate the bird feeder, either by string or hanging it by wire or something from a branch that you can raise and lower. I know it sounds complicated, but the squirrels are very clever, and they are very determined at getting at that bird seed.
Yep.
Yes, I noticed that. So I think I'm going to try the cayenne pepper because so long as it doesn't affect the birds.
No, it doesn't affect the birds.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, Barbara, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Let's go to Jamie in New Milford, Connecticut. Hi, Jamie. You're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi there, Rich. Hi.
Hello.
Fascinating show today.
Well, thank you.
Really, I've learned, as always, so much. I have a visitor in my yard today that I haven't experienced before, flitting in and out of the branches of the trees. I'm not getting a clear picture of this bird, but it's a beautiful sort of russet color on the back, and the song it's singing is a series of high, clear notes, like four or five single notes, almost like a cardinal song, but it is definitely not a cardinal. I'm totally baffled.
Well, I'm going to ask for Ray's benefit here. Can you do a little rendition of it?
Thank you for asking.
I'm going to deal with allergies, you guys. It's not going to sound very pretty. Kind of it's a whistle.
Well, that sounds very nice. Have you checked out the possibility of a female cardinal singing? Now, that may sound...
Well, they're pretty common in the yard, and they're that lovely dove, olivey, gray, greeny color. This was very you know, russet.
Russet.
Brown color.
Okay.
I'm working with my wonderful Cornell Lab birdsong book, mm-hmm. and I thought, well, brown thrasher.
Well,
maybe,
brown thrasher is very inconsistent when it comes to singing. They'll sing something and switch to something else really fast.
The thrashers?
Yes.
Huh.
They are constant. They're one of the mimic thrushes. So
So they'd be mimicking a cardinal?
Yes, but not for long, because in a few seconds later, they will start singing somebody else's song. And
well,
then
I've had that going on in the yard, but I attributed it to the catbirds. We have a healthy population of catbirds in the yard this year, but maybe it's the thrasher and the catbirds having a sing-off.
Yeah, karaoke night.
Yes.
Yeah, karaoke night.
Well,
right?
Well, the trick about the thrasher is that they'll say things twice.
Yeah, well, this was, you know, a series of these high, clear whistles, and then it flew off, and mm-hmm. I saw it again, but it wasn't singing. The other thought, I don't know, wood thrush, but
wood
that
thrush
doesn't jive with the Cornell book song. It doesn't sound like that's my guy.
Okay, well,
I'm going to go with a thrasher. Thanks so much.
This is great. Thank you, Jamie. We appreciate the call. Let's go over to Nancy in Monterey, Mass. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. This is a bird identification, bird song identification.
Okay, yes.
I've been practicing my whistling. I'll probably dry up. But anyway, we have a wood thrush who sings at night,
mm-hmm.
and he started singing in the morning very early sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this new call, and it's two ascending notes. I'll try to duplicate it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it'll go into three descending notes.
Minor
and then
step.
It kind of goes into a wood thrushy type thing.
Oh, I was waiting for your wood thrushy type thing.
I cannot do a wood thrush.
I was hoping that you might try.
No.
Well, you're in Monterey over there in Massachusetts.
Yeah, and we've got pretty much of a wooded yard, mm-hmm. lots of trees.
Mm-hmm. Well, one possibility would be, let me just ask you this. Is it repeated often with a pause in between, or is it rapidly repeated?
With a pause.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of like I did.
Yes, okay.
And it's very early in the morning.
Well, a couple of things come to mind, and is it a nice clear whistle?
Yeah, you really notice it.
Yeah, well, black-capped chickadee has a clear whistle call.
Oh, really?
That could be one of the candidate sounds.
Okay.
And then the other one would be tufted titmouse, which will sound somewhat like that too. But again,
what does a tufted titmouse sound like, Rich?
They usually are two notes in descending order.
Oh.
And but then they have a variety of variations to that theme, and which may be a spinoff of that kind.
Okay.
And then the other possibility, and I'm not thinking that it is the wood thrush, though. The wood thrush has a beautiful flute-like song,
one of the prettiest
sounds in nature.
Yeah.
So I'm going to suggest black-capped chickadee.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask that you keep an ear out for it.
Okay.
And when we come back on again, I'd like you to call and see if we're on there.
That's great. That would be very nice.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
Nancy,
okay, Nancy.
Thanks a lot, and thanks for the songs. We enjoyed it. Let's go to Charlene in East Hampton. Charlene, you're on.
Hi, Rich. This is going to be quick because
okay.
I know we're short of time. 5 years ago, moved to a new property. We have woods on two sides, but an open backyard. So my husband made and researched bluebird houses. And he built one, he put one up, and we've been lucky enough every single summer to get a bluebird family. This summer, too, we're on our second one.
Mm-hmm.
So he got so excited a year ago, and he made a bunch of other little bird houses, and he put them on the borderline of the woods in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And these, of course, filled up with sparrows.
Yes, okay.
And the sparrows now are making the poor bluebird parents crazy because they just are constantly at the bluebird house. We took the sparrow houses down. We got rid of them. But they're still, now I've got a yard full of sparrows, and they're just making the bluebird family crazy. Is there anything else I can do?
Well, there was a bluebird nest design that came up a few years ago. Well, a few more years ago by now. And that was called a Peterson nest box with a hole in the top that deters sparrows. Bluebirds are happy with it. You might check the Bluebird Society for the Peterson nest box design.
Okay, Charlene, I'm afraid that's where we will have to leave it.
Okay,
so
that's great.
Thanks
okay,
a lot
thanks,
for the call.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to everybody who called in. Rich, a great job today, as always. Thanks for being on time. That was nice. It's a nice little novelty.
Well, we keep striving.
Support comes from Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953. Sheehy. No. Try again, Ray. Sheehy Opticians.com. SPAC, welcoming the New York City Ballet to their summer home for the 48th season through July 12th with 15 ballets. This year, Fidelity sponsors Kids on the Lawn, SPAC.org for tickets. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume, and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. And the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. Nature.org/Adirondacks. Thanks to the great Rich Guthrie. Thanks to the great Zach Malloy for being at the controls. And our phones were answered by Mike Allinger. Thanks to the great Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday, Rich.
Yippee.
We'll see you tomorrow.